You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today, I'm joined by Lucy House. Lucy is a registered mental health nurse who has personal experience of an eating disorder. Following on from her personal experience, Lucy decided to train as a registered mental health nurse and joins us today to discuss her experience of an eating disorder and her work, including the challenges and hopes for the future. Hello, Lucy.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on Full of Beans. I've been an avid listener for a while.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'm so glad. I love it when people come on and they're like, oh yeah, I listen to podcasts all the time, because you know that it's just going to be like a very casual chat rather than like a formal interview, and it's really nice that you just already have a feel for the podcast. Yeah. So thank you for supporting.
No, that's fine. Thank you for making it.
It's actually we're recording this on the 27th of February, so 28 days in February. 2 days. Oh my god, it's a birthday on Wednesday.
Oh really?
I've not even thought about it. Yeah, it's his second birthday. Oh gosh, I best do something.
That's like you have two birthdays, like your own birthday and this birthday. That is true.
Well, good. I am not going to lie. My birthday was in January, the end of January. And I'd organised this party. I absolutely love organising parties and like getting everybody together. And I'd organised this party, and my plan was to have said party in a gazebo in the garden. But this is like the depths of January, like the end of January. So I have cancelled it, and my partner's birthday is in July. So I'm like, okay, well, we'll do like a joint birthday party. Nice. But everybody knows it's my birthday party, so
yeah, you take over.
Yeah, I'm having a second birthday party.
Absolutely, yeah, you own that. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think anybody born in like the cold months deserves a second birthday in January. Yeah. It's so much better having a warm birthday because you can be outside.
It must be hard in January having your birthday. I mean, you've just had Christmas, so it's like, you know.
Mine's quite good being the end of Jan, because people start to come out of that like January blues, because it's they've probably been paid by then. January's nearly over, but they're still doing sober January.
So
yeah, although none of my friends did this year. They've done it by my birthday.
Good no, this year you've got the birthday of the podcast, you've got your second birthday later on in the year, so it's gonna be good.
Anyway, whilst I ramble on about birthdays, so I'm really interested to hear about your role. I've worked with mental health nurses in the past, but I think a lot of people don't really know what the role of a mental health nurse is. So I guess to start with, do you want to give an overview of what a mental health nurse does in general? And then later on, we can go into more specifics with eating disorders.
Yeah, sure. So a mental health nurse in general can have many different roles really within the role, depending on what environment you're in. So you've got like inpatient, community, even working remotely. You know, these days nurses can do far more than just being on a ward. But I would say that the day-to-day life of a nurse is basically making sure that the patients are safe and well in whatever capacity that is, whether that be visiting them at home or on a ward. So, you know, your day-to-day as a nurse will be checking, physical observations, creating care plans for them, individual needs, if there's any specific needs for that patient, talking to them as often as you can. As a nurse, you are very, very busy. So, you know, having that one-to-one contact time with patients is really valuable. And unfortunately, it's not done as often as I would like to anyway. But the bottom line is just making sure that patients are safe and their needs are being met, whatever those needs are. Everyone's individual, but that's my like foundation. You know, wherever I work as a nurse, I always make sure that, right, look at each patient on an individual basis. Are their needs being met today? You know, whatever their needs are, you're reading through care plans, you're always risk assessing as well. That's a big part of nursing as well, risk assessing. I always say that everything's a risk, really, in a medical environment. Everything's a risk. You're constantly risk assessing, so it's updating those. Just doing a lot of evaluating all the time. You've got, as a nurse, you've got to really multitask. You've got to be, you know, you're doing like notes, but at the same time you're talking to patients, you're liaising with other healthcare specialists, doctors, other nurses, occupational therapists, CBT therapists, family members as well. So you've got a lot of communication going on as a nurse. So you're literally doing everything, basically. Anything under the sun you can think of, it's in there. Yeah.
Wonder humans, I think, is basically, aww, what is a registered mental health nurse? A wonder human. I mean, it sounds exactly like you said. You're getting involved in everything, and that must be so important for you to have really good relationships with your patients, in order to be able to. I'm sure we'll come on to this later, but I did my master's dissertation on looking at the role of a registered mental health, a paediatric nurse, in treating somebody with an eating disorder. And they said that one of the most vital things they found in their role was being that sort of communication between the family and the patient and the doctor, because sometimes the doctor might, you know, use language that maybe the patient's not familiar with, whereas the nurse, because of that therapeutic relationship that's developed, you know, because of all the, you know, checking the measures and things like that, and doing all the care plans, they've got that relationship, so they can almost be that person to be the soundboard for their worries, but also tell them what's going on as well. So it sounds such a vital role.
And also vice versa to that, sometimes like the patient, if they want to speak to the doctor or whatnot, sometimes it's not possible for the patient to just do that. So again, the nurse is kind of like the go-between in between that as well. So you're having to really sort of listen to the patient's needs, but also listen to the doctor's needs, and just be that person that's got a relationship with both of them. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so when it comes to eating disorders specifically, are there sort of specific things that are, I guess, unique to somebody with an eating disorder that a registered mental health nurse would do, or is it quite similar in terms of mental health?
I would say that the basics are similar, you know, because you're seeing what problems they have, trying to meet those the best you can. So I would say that it's similar, but in terms of and somebody with an eating disorder in particular, again, it's very individual is what I'd say, because obviously every person with an eating disorder, their needs are going to be slightly different. I mean, I've worked in specialist eating disorder hospitals, and I would say everything that we do for every patient is like physical observations, care plans tailored to them, and sort of meetings that we have, CPA meetings and whatnot. So every patient will have similar things, but it's very difficult to say what I would do, because obviously each patient will be different. But that's how I would do it anyway. I know it depends, I think, and I think we spoke about this before, the knowledge that you have of eating disorders. Some nurses may not have as much knowledge, and you know, that's not their fault. Obviously I have more knowledge because of my own experience. But I feel like because I have that experience, I might just instinctively know a few more things than maybe somebody that hasn't worked with eating disorders as much. So it's quite difficult to say what I would do on a day-to-day basis, because and as I'm sure every nurse will know, every day is different. At a hospital, you know, everything can be going smoothly and then suddenly something happens. You know, it keeps you on your toes, but I definitely think that there is room for improvement in knowledge around eating disorders for nurses in general. Yeah, definitely.
So I guess going back to what you were saying about like your instinctive knowledge, obviously that's fantastic that you have that knowledge, but equally, I don't think that should be relied upon in order for somebody to be getting the right sort of treatment, you know, for a nurse to have their own experience. And I have heard it in the past where we're speaking to mental health nurses and they'd say, oh, my supervisor always called me in when we had an eating sort of patient because they knew I had lived experience, which again, you know, it makes sense because you've got that lived experience, but I think that's quite a dangerous.
So, yeah.
It's not the most, what's the word? Evidence-based.
Course,
because
yeah.
You know, you have your own experience, Baltimore. Like you said, everybody's different. So when you're training to be a mental health nurse, is there any training regarding eating disorders?
Again, a tricky one, because I've spoken to different nurses, which some have had more training than others. My training in particular, it was very minimal, unfortunately, in my opinion. I think that there should have been more. And the training that was given was more targeted towards adolescents, young people. So we didn't do any training on adults. And obviously I know that, you know, it's very important with children, and that's usually when the onset is. But obviously that's just, you know, it's a blanket statement, really. You know, like not everybody will develop an eating disorder at a young age. You can get it at any age. So I do feel that there is room for improvement with the training, and the training that we did get, I don't want to like shoot it down or anything, because I did get good training, but in terms of eating disorders, the training I did get, it was like a few hours, you could say, really, out of the 2 years that I trained for, speaking about eating disorders and mainly anorexia, really, you know, not touching on anything else apart from that. So if somebody going in with kind of no knowledge, I think that it's very limited what you are taught, in my opinion.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at rss.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With rss.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
But no, absolutely, you can't just rely on personal experience, because again, I know I've said it probably about five times now, but everybody is different. It's true, isn't it? Like, everybody is different. And just because you've been through something doesn't mean you know everything about it. And absolutely not. Even when I was working as a mental health nurse in the eating disorder hospitals, that I did come across things which I wasn't as knowledgeable about, you know, I had to ask, you know, and it doesn't sort of give you the right to be like, oh, well, I know everything and yeah, I can help this person because I've been through it, blah, blah, blah. I think it's useful to a certain extent, but like you say, the evidence base has to come first. And I just feel like it would be useful if there was more of that for nurses. And I think that from speaking to the people I train with and my friends, they want to know more as well, because it's such a delicate topic and they don't want to say anything wrong or they don't want to make mistakes. And I feel like there's a need and there's a want for it. So hopefully that will be listened to and in the future more training given. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think the one thing that I found when I did my master's dissertation was that people, like the nurses, did really want more information because, like you say, it is a delicate topic and people don't want to say the wrong thing, so they end up not saying anything at all, which can actually be worse than potentially saying something out of line. But equally, I think it's so important for people to be aware of, because I mean, the fact that you have a couple of hours in your 2 years training really shocks me. My friend that I mentioned before, she actually had no training on eating disorders for hers. And I just thought, you know, we know so much that eating disorders are a physical as well as a mental health problem, but so many people that will go to a mental health ward could, you know, comorbidities and eating disorders are so common. And that's where I think, because a lot of people will say, I've heard it in the past, you know, oh, well, it's only important really to know about anorexia because people don't really get sent to hospital for bulimia or binge eating disorder. And I don't think that is right. You know, maybe it is more common, but you could still present with somebody with binge eating disorder or bulimia. But equally, if somebody's got a comorbidity, you know, maybe they have schizophrenia or depression, and that's what they have been sent to the hospital for, and then they're also experiencing binge eating disorder, bulimia, whatever, and you're not able to recognize that, that's going to be so damaging. Like, I've heard people in the past say, oh, I went into hospital and I was in a general ward and, you know, I just didn't eat for a week because nobody asked me to eat. And you know, I think maybe nowadays anorexia might be picked up a little bit better, I don't know, but I feel like bulimia, binge eating disorder, you could very easily get away with things like sneaking off to the toilet after a meal to engage in purging behaviors or, you know, whatever that might be. So I think the experience of going into hospital could actually be quite damaging if that information isn't there.
Yeah, and I think it also stops people from reaching out for help as well, because a lot of the time people might think that they might have tried before and maybe they might have not been taken seriously, or they might have been given unhelpful advice. So I think that it would definitely benefit everybody just for more training in general about all eating disorders. I've spoken to some people that, you know, they've been to the doctors. I mean, this is a classic one, I'm sure you've heard this, but, you know, they've been to the doctors and wanting help for the eating disorder, and they've been turned away because they're not low enough in weight, or they're not doing as much behaviours as they would think that they should be doing. And I just feel like it's just sending people home to get worse to then go back when they're at death's door. So I just feel like the more information we know, the better, really. It can't do any more harm than it's doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose if somebody's listening and they are a mental health nurse and they do want to know a bit more, do you have any tips of things that, you know, might be indicators for you, or things that you might look out for if either somebody is on your ward with an eating disorder or you know, they've come in with something else, but you just keep an eye out just to make sure that they've not got an eating disorder.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good question. I would say maybe look at if you notice how much time they're obsessing about food. Are they like taking a really long time to make decisions around food? Are they maybe eating their food in a disordered way that maybe you'd think that's a bit strange? Are they disappearing at certain times of the day consecutively? You know, it's like a set time, because that's usually quite a common thing with eating disorders, like routine and set times that they do certain things. So, you know, just keep an eye. Is this happening? Is it happening every day at the same time? They disappear or do something in particular? I think just looking out for things which just seem out of the ordinary, really. And maybe monitoring their intake around food. Are they eating quite a lot less than you'd think, or are they eating large amounts maybe at certain times? You know, are they not eating throughout the day, but then in the evening are they wanting and asking for a lot? Maybe are they wearing certain clothes? Are they trying to hide maybe their body with bigger, baggier clothes all the time? Are they losing weight? If you're monitoring the weight, that there's so many things that you could easily pick up on, should I say? If you just know, because it's difficult, because if somebody that might not be as well informed about eating disorders sees somebody eating and thinks, oh, well, they're okay, you know, they're eating, that's okay, you know, they don't have an eating disorder, you know, they're looking, in their mind, they'll be like looking for, well, if they're not eating, full stop. And yeah, that would be a sign. That would be a very obvious sign. But it's not always as blatant as that. Maybe also they could be really fussy around food, or maybe saying that they only eat this, only eat that, or I can't eat this because I've got an excuses for everything under the sun. So I do think there's a lot of ways, if you think about it, that there is a lot of ways, but maybe I understand why people are a bit hesitant to maybe go down that road if they're not sure. But, you know, I'd always say just err on the side of caution. You know, you'd rather ask them or ask somebody else than let them go and then they get worse. You know, obviously, as we know, precaution, you know, it's better than cure, really. You know, if you can try and stop somebody in the tracks, you know, that's there's quite good evidence towards that. You know, the sooner you get things sort of get help, the sooner things might get better. Obviously, I can't say that for everybody, but there is that statistic out there. The sooner you get help. Yeah,
absolutely. I think you've given such good examples there. And also, you know, when somebody's in hospital, you can have eyes on them a lot of the time, and yeah. So those behaviors could be picked up. But I guess one thing I wanted to ask, because this is a difficulty that I brought up in my dissertation as well, is the aspect of a handover, because obviously, you know, if you've got somebody who has maybe not eaten all day and then in the evening they're eating loads, you as a nurse will go home and you'll change over shift. So, you know, is there a process that you can record things like that? I suppose you all have to be on the same page. So that again would rely on everybody knowing the signs of an eating disorder rather than just specific individuals in the team, and everybody being quite on the ball about that, rather than some people thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to recognise those signs, and other people just kind of turning a blind eye to it.
So it, where I've worked, you document everything. You know, if you don't document it, it didn't happen. So absolutely everything is documented. And then in the handover process, what I do is, everybody might do it a little bit different, but I always used to go in with my own notes to handover. and read off those, but also the notes would be documented on the system that we all work off as well. So if everybody's doing what they should be, it should look all in chronological order. You know, you'd have like your early shift notes, your afternoon shift notes, your night shift notes. So every nurse that comes onto shift can have access to every documentation that's been put on for throughout the day. So fingers crossed, that should be what people are doing across the board. Obviously, I know things happen and you get busy and you might forget this, that and the other. But as long as you just, even just a quick sentence, as long as you just document it somewhere, and in the actual handover, even if you can't say all of the information, you can say, look, I've documented it on, please read up on it. If you want to know more information, just look at the system. Because obviously I know in handover that time is quite short for some places, so you can't get everything in. I'm sure every nurse that's out there, if they're listening, they'll know that you've got to document everything to your life, really.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's really good, and just a really good thing to sort of reinstate, you know, everybody needs to be on that same page and making sure that things are recorded. Particularly, I think, if somebody's not in for an eating disorder, just really focusing, you know, if someone does start to notice those signs, keeping an eye on it together.
Yeah, everything.
So how did your experience get you to where you are today as a mental health nurse?
Yeah, so I have a master's in mental health nursing. I did my undergraduate degree in acting, actually. So it's a little bit different. But so just in terms of my eating disorder experience, so I'm 30 now, and I was diagnosed when I was 13. I was in about year 9, I think, so long ago now. and I was just sort of struggling with eating. I went to the doctors. You know, again, a lot of people have this experience. You know, the parents take them to the doctors, and you know, before you know it, things happen so quickly. I find with eating disorders, you know, you can just go from A to B in a few months. But before I knew it, I was
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
An inpatient facility. I'd never been away from my family before like that, so it was all really new and scary. And then I would say from the ages of 13 to around 16, 17, I had a few more stays in inpatient. So I think I had about 3 in total in my teenage years. And then when I got to about the age of 18, I really just started to, something just hit me in my head, like, not literally, but something just like, I was just like, I can't just keep doing this with my life. You know, I was just getting sick and tired of the eating disorder. I started to go to college at this age, and I started to see like a bit more of independence, a bit more of life. And I was just like, I think I might want to try that. Cause for so long I'd just been in my own, like from 13 to 17, I just, my anorexia came before absolutely everything. And I just, you know, my mum and dad were basically the ones keeping me alive. And I just had no interest in getting better at all. But like I say, as soon as I kind of got to an age where I was starting to be an adult, I was like, that looks a bit better than what I'm doing right now. Maybe I should give that a go. Throughout my 20s, I did have my ups and downs still, but thankfully, like I say, at 18, I never had to go back in inpatient at all. I think I was done with outpatient services in my mid-20s, maybe about 23 or 4. And ever since then, I went on to uni. Like I say, I did my undergraduate degree in acting, because that was something that, because people say, oh, why did you do acting, you know, and that was something that really helped me kind of move away from my eating disorder, because it was something that I enjoyed, and it was like a bit of an escape, really, because obviously when you're acting, you're doing different characters and whatnot. So I don't know if I ever thought, oh, I want to do this because I want to be a famous actor. I think I just did it because it was something I enjoyed. And for so long in my life, I'd had so many years where I just didn't have any enjoyment. So if anything, that sort of was the hook to getting my life back, really, doing something I enjoyed and being more independent. So in terms of becoming a mental health nurse, I started to do a few jobs that were like support worker jobs, and I was like, I wonder if I can actually, because I didn't think I would be able to with my undergraduate degree, I wonder if I'd be able to do nursing. And I inquired, and I would, you know, with my previous jobs and my own experience, I think that really benefited to it in terms of my eating disorder. Actually, one part I did miss out, I think I've told you, Hannah, in the past, that one of my first jobs of nursing was in a hospital that I was a patient in. I think when I was about 16, I was in that inpatient place. And when I became a nurse, my first job was going back there working as a nurse. So that was really weird, basically. that was strange, but good. It was really good, because I wanted to go back to see if I could help and make a difference and whatnot. And I think that was a big goal that I had. I can't change the world overnight, but it was actually quite, looking back, it was quite a big achievement, really. Because sometimes I just catch myself thinking, I can remember when I was sat on that chair, like as a patient, and now I'm, you know, like on the other side. That was a bit surreal.
Was it difficult to go back, or was it just like, oh my God, Lucy, like you've done this, you've worked so hard to recover that you're now giving back to other people?
It was a little bit of a mixture, if I'm honest. I'd have moments where I was like, oh my God, like this is what I wanted to do. You know, I'm back where I was, because, you know, that's why I went into doing this job. I wanted to help people with eating disorders. So, you know, for it to be my first job, I think it was like, this is it. This is what you were doing it for. But then I think at moments I did have a few times where I was a bit like, whoa, you know, like I don't know if this should have been my first job. It was a bit overwhelming. And I think I went in with really high expectations for myself, really. I think I went in thinking, right, I can do this, I can do that, I want to do this, I want to do that. And unfortunately, I couldn't do that, you know. Nobody can do that. Nobody can walk into a hospital and be like, oh, I'm going to help everybody, you know. Like, it's great to have that attitude. But I think I set my bar a little bit too high. And I was like, right, you need to maybe just, like, take a step back, Lucy, and maybe just work on yourself as a nurse first before you you take on the world.
Yeah. I think that's a very, I don't know whether it's just people with eating disorders or whether people that have been through something in general that then go into it themselves. But as a community of people, I have noticed we are so bloody caring and want to help people so much. But something I wanted to ask you, because within that, I think often, and I'm not saying this is what you were doing in the slightest, I want to know how you avoided this. I think because I know this is what I do, sometimes in doing the podcast is I give so much to other people that it's almost a way of distracting because I'm not helping myself. And I can imagine that going into that job, you know, one, it's a new job, but also it's something that you really wanted to do when, you know, after your own experience. So how did you make sure that not only were you, you know, doing good in your job and looking after people, how did you make sure that you carried on looking after yourself as well? Because it is potentially going to be an environment that is quite triggering, especially when you're in hospital, because people are probably going to be more severe than, let's say, you know, if you were in an outpatient unit. It's not always the case, but
absolutely. It's I always say to every nurse, you've got to put your own oxygen mask on first to be able to help other people. And looking back now, I don't regret it, but I do think that maybe I should have maybe not gone into that as my first job. I think what I did to help myself was, obviously there was some staff there that were there when I was a patient, so obviously they knew me, and they were there to talk to, so I think that was useful. Because they knew about me, rather than me having to tell them from scratch about my experience. They sort of knew already. Having a supportive environment around you, like my parents, like, you know, they've always been there for me, and they were there to talk to whenever I was sort of maybe having a bad day and thinking, oh, you know, I don't know if I should be doing this, you know, they were always sort of supporting me in whatever decision I made. So I think it's good to have, when you're working in such a stressful environment as a hospital, I think it's good to have support in your job, as in your co-workers, but then also support outside as well, because at the time I lived on my own, and so when I'd come home, sometimes it was difficult, because I'd have nobody sort of there to speak to, but I knew that I had like family on the end of the phone, so I just think it's useful for people to be there for you in whatever way, you know, if they're there physically or on the phone. I just think it's useful for people to know that, you know, if you do need to speak, then you've got somebody there. Because if I didn't have them, I think it could have been very different, because you know, you can just let your mind wander and you can just be like, what am I doing, you know, and it just gets you down. And also, what I forgot to mention, and I think this was a very big thing, it was during COVID and lockdown.
It was in
2020, and I think that made everything 10 times worse, because obviously you communicate, I mean, I don't want to go down the whole COVID story route, but obviously like, you know, you had limited access to people, didn't you? You were in bubbles and all that. I mean, it's giving me palpitations thinking about it. Yeah, so it was difficult to communicate to people, full stop, let alone, you know, just on a normal basis,
Yeah, I think, you know, starting that in COVID must have been really tough. And what you were saying there about, like, you know, being on your own and not having anybody, sometimes feeling maybe like you don't have anyone to talk to, I can imagine that would have been a perfect environment for an eating sort of to pop up and say, I can be there for you. Yeah. And when, you know, you've been in that environment all day, that was one of the reasons, unfortunately, I had to leave working in eating disorders, was because the only conversations I was having was about food and body. Yeah. And then I was in COVID as well. So, you know, then you don't have that space to sort of, you know, leave the conversation. For me, I was working from home, so I didn't have that chance to sort of leave the conversation at work or discuss it with anybody. So in terms of, I mean, I guess that's quite a difficult challenge itself, but it sounds like you've got a really good support network, both at work and then at home as well. I think that's really important. But what would you say are some of the challenges that mental health nurses face, I guess, in particular with eating disorders? But if you want to do it generally for mental health, I can imagine there's some things that you could discuss there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say first, like, I think nurses do a great job, whatever. I mean, I know you know that, and
yes,
I know most people.
I wasn't
know
like,
that.
What's the challenge?
No,
the
no,
caliber
no.
Of nurses that we have, that is not what.
No, no, no. I know that. But I wanted to make sure I wasn't coming across like, oh, some
no,
nurses are
sure.
Just, you know. But
no,
absolutely, because you know, you could apply it to something that I don't know much about. You know, in nursing, you can't know everything, can you? So, but no,
and I think that's a really important thing to highlight is that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't know everything about everything.
No.
But it's, I think, having a general awareness. And sorry that I interrupted you, but one thing that I did on my dissertation was we were discussing having a general training course for everybody. And then anybody that was interested could go on to a level two. And then they would be sort of the, you know, I guess, knowledgeable person about eating disorders. So if someone presented with certain symptoms, you'd go to them and say, I've got this patient and I think that there may be.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Presenting with eating disorder symptoms, can you have a look at them?
Good.
Rather than everybody needing to know.
That's
because
good.
Like you say, there should be a specialist sort of there every, you know, maybe you have different categories or whatever. Because people can't know everything about everything. That's
absolutely
a really unrealistic expectation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that'd be a really good way, actually, just having like a lead person that you know is knowledgeable in this area, in that area, and you go to. No, I think that's a good idea. That's a really good idea. I feel like a lot still needs to be done. I know we've kind of mentioned it earlier, but a lot still needs to be done on like stereotypes for eating disorders. I feel like a lot of people, they're like, oh, yeah, I'd be able to spot an eating disorder. Yeah, it'd be somebody really, really skinny, probably a teenager. And it's just like, let's just broaden our, you know, expectations of this. So I feel like knowledge around eating disorders as a mental illness rather than what a lot of people see as like a weight illness, should I say. I feel like there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. I think it's getting better. I think it's slowly getting better, but I just think that especially maybe like GPs and things need to, I'm sure there's some great GPs that already know this, but just in general, like I say, I've heard it so many times about people getting turned away because of their weight and whatnot. But in terms of nurses, that still could be something, because I know some people, like, you go to your practice nurse, don't you, sometimes, instead of your doctor, and, you know, the first thing that they do is weigh you. And also, just talking about weighing you at like, GPs and things like that, also knowing to not just be, like, shouting it out to you and maybe saying, like, oh, do you want to go on backwards or do you want to know it? You know, I feel like they should say that to everybody, really, you know, like, do you want to know your weight, you know.
Because you don't need to
necessarily
know it.
No. So I feel like the whole issue around weight, I think, needs to be addressed. And maybe things like, more knowledge about just an individual approach to eating disorders instead of, again, there's very, I don't really know where it came from. It's just kind of like TV and media, but there's like certain things that people think you have to have for an eating disorder. Like I say, one of them's all really thin, you know, one of them is maybe just eating vegetables or something. Do you know what I mean? I feel like we need to broaden our knowledge about eating disorders, that they can appear to be quite normal, maybe to some people. You know, you might not spot it. You might think, oh, they're doing all right, but actually inside they're really suffering. And that's difficult. You know, it's very easy for me to say what I think should happen and what we should have knowledge on, but I don't have the answer in terms of how we deliver that knowledge, because it's a difficult illness to teach about, you know, because there is so many different variations that the illness can present as, and different behaviors and different all sorts. But I just feel like maybe if we just think a little bit more out the box, should I say, when we're thinking about eating disorders, that, and maybe be more aware that it can be in all ages, all genders, all shapes and sizes as well. So I think that's probably my number one, really, you know, just more knowledge and getting rid of stigmas, really, because they're not useful to anybody, really, in my
opinion. Well, no, exactly. Yeah, I think the stigmas really limit the kind of quality of treatment that you can provide. Mm. And I think one thing that I definitely noticed when I was doing the masters again was just people finding it quite difficult working with somebody with an eating disorder. And I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but often I guess this maybe is less so in mental health, but this may be more generalized nursing. Often when a patient comes into hospital, they want your help because they want to get better. But something that the nurses I worked with spoke about was that they found it very challenging because, one, the eating disorder was very secretive. It was very manipulative. And again, I'm talking about this being the eating disorder, not the person. I'm very
aware of course.
The person is being ruled by their eating disorder, but it does take over you as a person. And you know, you're often, when your food's brought to you, you're not going to be grateful. You're not going to probably say thank you for your food when you're really in the depth of it, because at the end of the day, the last thing you want to do is eat. And I think that was one thing that they said was a real big challenge, and also understanding your part in their journey. I think maybe not all the time, but maybe sometimes when you see somebody in hospital, you might see them for a longer period of time and get to see them recover maybe more than you do from an eating disorder. But when you're in eating disorder recovery, the hospital admission is often the real start of your journey. And you're never really going to probably see somebody get to that recovered position. So actually kind of understanding your role in their recovery, or where you fit into their recovery, they said was a real challenge. And just balancing that sort of secretive and manipulative, those behaviours. You know, I've had people in the past say, you know, people wearing dressing gowns when they're being weighed, and just making sure that weigh-ins are, you know, in, you know, very thin pyjamas so that nothing can be hidden, not letting people go away, like you said, after meals, and, you know, not walking to the further away bathroom rather than going to the one closer. It's like you said earlier, it's very difficult to get your head around those sorts of things if you've not had an eating disorder. But they're the sorts of things that I don't think are educated about, but are really important in helping somebody, which I think that's a big challenge.
Yeah. I think those are the things that like you say, it's you're going to have knowledge on if you've been through it. They're the things that are difficult to teach to people. They don't teach them at all, really, you know, but it's those little things that what am I trying to say here is when you were saying about the the part that a nurse might play in somebody's recovery journey, I think is really good, really important what you said there. Because if I look at my journey, for example, I had a lot of nurses' input, and at that time, it might look to them like, oh, I didn't help Lucy very much at all. But it's because the only person that can really get yourself better is yourself. So it's not like their work was useless. It was just that, you know, they was with me for a very, very short space of time. And by the time I realised I want to get better, you know, they weren't part of my treatment, but it's still valuable. I'd say to nurses, you know, even if you can't see any progress being made, it doesn't mean what you're doing is not valuable, because that person might look back in years and be like, oh yeah, I remember when that nurse said to me blah, blah, blah. And then they might implement it in their life years later. So it's those little things that really do make a difference. And they stick with people. They stick with, I can think of loads of examples of what nurses have said to me, some good, not so good, unfortunately. But the good ones, you know, I do remember, you know, I do remember things that were helpful to me. And at the time I was like, oh, I don't want to listen to that, you know, whatever, you know. But now, you know, I still remember it. So it's still part of my journey. It's just it's like a delayed effect. Yeah. So I'd say to nurses, like, you know, don't be disheartened, because it is valuable what you're saying, even if the person doesn't want to hear it at that very moment. Like you say, I feel like eating disorders are one of the only illnesses where the person doesn't want to get better. And that is a real challenge. I'm not going to lie, it is, yeah.
Yeah, I often think that, in that I actually had that with my mum this weekend. My mum said something and I exploded and I was like, I cannot believe you've just said that. Like, how insensitive, blah, blah, blah. I'm so angry at you. And you know what? It's probably the thing that's had the most impact in this part of my recovery, because it was real. And I often think that about, you know, things that maybe doctors or clinicians that I've worked with in the past that I've said, and I'm like, how dare you say that? And then actually, you know, a few months or a few years down the line, you're like, God, that's so right. And at the time, it's really horrible for them because they might get the backlash of that. But I think often the biggest impacts that you have are going to upset the eating disorder.
Cool.
So I think that's another thing for nurses just to recognise, is that you're probably not going to be their favourite person. And if you are their favourite person, I'm not so sure that it's a good sign.
Absolutely. Yeah, because, you've got to remember, I think, nurses that maybe aren't so up to scratch with eating disorders, you've got to remember that it's like two different people, and you know, you're helping the actual person, not the eating disorder. And sometimes it might feel like you're getting nowhere, but that person in there will be listening and will take that on board, even if they're thinking that they're not at that very moment. It is. So just keep doing it, you know. If you think it's not working, just keep doing it. Just keep at it.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Lucy. I think this podcast episode, with your experience as a mental health nurse and your personal experience, is going to be so useful, and not just for mental health nurses. I think anybody sort of working in that sort of setting will really, really appreciate that. And I know that you've been doing quite a lot of work in terms of this sort of thing. So if people want to find out more about you or reach out for, you know, if they want some advice or support, is there anywhere that they can contact you?
Yeah, of course. So I've set up like a little sort of recovery account, where it's, you know, I want to give people advice. So yeah, it's LV Recovery, and that is for Instagram and also Twitter. So if anybody does want any education or just want to speak or just anything, you know, I love speaking to people. Again, this is why I do this. So if I can help, you know, that's my core, helping people. So yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Lucy. It's been a pleasure.
That's okay. Thank you very much for having me.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.